peppered with blue checked print and sunflowers. Pinned to the refrigerator by magnets were many snapshots of children, but also groups of young people, arms thrown around each other. One photo depicted the senator in an orange astronaut suit, space helmet tucked under his arm. The senator's wife scrubbed her hands under steaming sink water. Wanda did, too, in case she was needed. The woman Wanda called Pilar came into the kitchen, carrying the cooler of tiger meat. She said something in Spanish when she saw Jun Do shirtless, and she said something else in Spanish when she saw his wound. The senator's wife scrubbed well past her elbows. Without looking from her work, she said, "Jun Do, this is Pilar, our family's special helper."
"I'm the maid," Pilar said.
"Jun Do? Isn't that the name you give a missing person?"
"It's Pak Jun Do," Jun Do said. Then he pronounced it slowly. "Jun Do."
Pilar looked at the cooler, studying the way someone had attempted to scrape away the Red Cross insignia.
"My nephew Manny drives a truck that moves organs and eyes and things between hospitals," she said. "He uses a cooler just like this."
The senator's wife popped on latex gloves.
"Actually," she said, "I don't think a John Doe is a missing person. I think it's when you have the person, just not his identity."
Wanda blew into her latex gloves. "A John Doe has an exact identity," she said, and considered the patient. "It's just yet to be discovered." The senator's wife poured hydrogen peroxide up and down his arm, massaging it into the wounds.
"This will loosen the sutures," she said.
For a moment, there was only the hiss of his arm foaming white. It didn't hurt, exactly. It felt like ants, maybe, swarming in and out of him. Wanda said, "Are you all right being treated by a female doctor?" Jun Do nodded. "Most of the doctors in Korea are women," he said, "though I've never seen one."
"A woman doctor?" Wanda asked.
"Or any doctor?" the senator's wife asked.
"Any doctor," he said.
"Not even in the military, for a physical?" the senator's wife asked.
"I guess I've never been sick," he said.
"Who patched you up?"
"A friend," Jun Do said.
"A friend?"
"A guy I work with."
While the wound foamed, the senator's wife lifted his arms, spread them wide, then brought them forward, her eyes following invisible lines on his body. He watched as she noted the burns on the undersides of his arms, candle marks from his pain training. She touched the ridges of the scars with her fingertips.
"A bad place to get burned," she said. "The skin is quite sensitive here."
She ran her hand across his chest to the collarbone.
"This knitting?" she said. "That's a fresh break to the clavicle."
She brought his hands up, as though she were going to kiss a ring. Instead, she studied the alignment of his finger bones.
"Do you want me to look you over? Do you have any complaints?"
He wasn't as muscular as when he'd been in the military, but his physique was strong, and he could feel the women looking at him.
"No," he said. "It's just these stitches. They itch like crazy."
"We'll get those out in no time," she said.
"Can I ask what happened?" "It's a story I'd rather not tell," he said. "But it was a shark that did it."
"Madre de Dios," Pilar said.
Wanda was standing next to the senator's wife. She held open a white first aid kit the size of a briefcase.
"You mean the kind with the fins that live in the ocean?"
Wanda asked.
"I lost a lot of blood," he said.
They just stared at him.
"My friend wasn't so lucky," he added.
"I understand," the senator's wife said. "Take a deep breath."
Jun Do inhaled.
"Really deep," she said. "Lift your shoulders."
He took a breath, deep as he could. It came with a wince. The senator's wife nodded.
"Your 11th rib," she said. "Still healing."
"Seriously, you want a full checkup, now's your chance."
Did she sniff his breath?
Jundo had the feeling there were things she was noting but no longer pointing out.
No, ma'am, he told her.
Wanda found a pair of tweezers and some finger scissors with pointed baby blades. He had 9 lacerations total, each one laced shut, and the senator's wife started with the longest one along the peak of his biceps. Pilar pointed at his chest.
Who's she?
Jundo looked down. He didn't know what to say.
That's my wife, he said.
Very beautiful, Pilar said.
She is beautiful, Wanda said. It's a beautiful tattoo, too.
Do you mind if I take a pic? Jundo had only had his photograph taken that one time by the old Japanese woman with the wooden camera, and he never saw the picture that came of it. But it haunted him, what she must have seen. Still, he didn't know how to say no.
Great,
Wanda said, and with a small camera she snapped a picture of his chest, then his injured arm, and finally she lifted the camera to his face and there was a flash in his eyes. Pilar asked,
Is she a translator too?
My wife's an actress, he said.
What's her name? Wanda asked.
Her name? Jundo asked.
Her name is Sun Moon.
The name was beautiful, he noticed, and it felt good in his mouth and to say aloud the name of his wife to these 3 women.
Sun Moon.
What is this stuff? The senator's wife asked. She held up a strand of suturing she'd removed. It was variously clear, yellow, and rust-colored.
It's fishing line, he said.
I guess if you'd caught tetanus, we'd already know by now, she said. In med school, they taught us never to use monofilament, but I can't for the life of me remember why.
What are you going to bring her?
Wanda asked.
As a souvenir of your trip to Texas.
Jundo shook his head. What do you suggest? Distractedly, the senator's wife asked,
What's she like?
She likes traditional dresses. Her yellow one is my favorite. She wears her hair back to show off her gold earrings.
She likes to sing karaoke?
She likes movies.
No, Wanda said. What's she like? Her personality? Jundo took a moment.
She needs lots of attention, he said, then paused, unsure how to proceed.
She is not free with her love. Her father was afraid that men would take advantage of her beauty, that they would be drawn to her for the wrong reasons. So when she was 16, he got her a job in a fish factory, where no men from Pyongyang would find her. That experience shaped her, made her strive for what she wanted. Still, she found a husband who is domineering. They say he can be a real asshole. And she is trapped by the state. She cannot choose her own movie roles. Except for karaoke, she can only sing the songs they tell her to sing. I suppose what matters is that, despite her success and stardom, her beauty and her children, Sun Moon is a sad woman. She is unaccountably alone. She plays the kayagum all day, plucking notes that are lonesome and forlorn. There was a pause, and Jundo realized all 3 women were staring at him.
You're not an asshole, husband, Wanda said. I know the look of one. The senator's wife stopped tugging sutures, and wholly, without guile, appraised his eyes. She looked at the tattoo on Jundo's chest. She asked,
Is there a way I could talk to her? I feel that if I could just speak to her, I would be able to help.
On the counter was a phone, one with a loopy cord that connected the handset to the base.
Can you get her on the line? She asked.
There are a few phones, Jundo said.
Pilar opened her cell phone.
I have international minutes, she said.
Wanda said,
I don't think North Korea works like that.
The senator's wife nodded and finished removing the stitches in silence. When she was done, she irrigated the wounds again, then stripped off her gloves. Jundo pulled on the driver's shirt he'd been wearing for 2 days. His arm felt as thick and raw as the day of the bite. As for the tie, He held it in his hand as the senator's wife did his buttons, her fingers strong and measured as they coaxed each button through its eye.
"Was the senator an astronaut?" he asked her.
"He trained as one," the senator's wife said.
"But he never got the call."
"Do you know the satellite?" he asked. "The one that orbits with people from many nations aboard."
"The space station?" Wanda asked.
"Yes," Jundo said. "That must be it. Tell me, is it built for peace and brotherhood?" The ladies looked at each other.
"Yes," the senator's wife said. "I suppose it is."
The senator's wife rummaged through kitchen drawers until she found a few doctor samples of antibiotics. She slipped two foil packets into his shirt pocket.
"For later, if you get sick," she said. "Take them if you have a fever."
"Can you tell the difference between a bacterial and viral infection?"
He nodded.
"No," Wanda said to the senator's wife. "I don't think you can."
The senator's wife said, "If you have a fever and are bringing up green or brown mucus, then take three of these a day until they're gone." She popped the first capsule out of the foil and handed it to him.
"We'll start a cycle now, just in case."
Wanda poured him a glass of water, but after he'd popped the pill in his mouth and chewed it up, he said,
"No thanks, I'm not thirsty."
"Bless your heart," the senator's wife said. Pilar opened the cooler.
"Aye,"
she said, and quickly closed it.
"What I'm supposed to do with this? Tonight is Tex-Mex."
"My word,"
the senator's wife said, shaking her head.
"Tiger."
"I don't know," Wanda said. "I kind of want to try it."
"Did you smell it?"
Pilar asked.
"Wanda,"
the senator's wife said,
"we could all go to hell for what's in that cooler."
Jundo jumped off the counter. With one hand, he began tucking in his shirt.
"If my wife were here," he said, "she'd tell me to throw it out and replace it with flank steak. She'd say you can't taste the difference anyway, and now everyone eats, and no one loses face. At dinner, I'd talk about how great it was, how it was the best meat I'd ever had, and that would make her smile."
Pilar looked at the senator's wife.
"Tiger tacos?"
The senator's wife tried the words in her mouth.
"Tiger tacos."
"Pak Jundo, what's called for now is rest," the senator's wife said.
"I'm going to show you to your room,"
she added with a quiet fierceness, as if she were transgressing somehow by being alone with him. The house had many hallways, lined with more family photos, these framed in wood and metal. The door to the room where he would sleep was slightly open, and when they swung it wide, a dog leaped off the bed. The senator's wife didn't seem concerned. The bed was covered with a quilt, and by pulling it taut, she removed the dog's impression.
"My grandmother was quite the quilter," she said, then looked into Jundo's eyes. "That's where you make a blanket out of scraps from your life. It doesn't take money, and the blanket tells a story."
Then she showed Jundo how to read the quilt.
"There was a mill in Odessa that printed panels of Bible stories on its flour sacks. The panels were like church windows. They let people see the story. Now this piece of lace is from the window of the house grandmother left when she was married at 15. This panel is Exodus, and here is Christ wandering, both from flour sacks. The black velvet is from the hem of her mother's funeral dress. She died not long after my grandmother came to Texas, and the family sent her this black swatch. This starts a sad time in her life. A patch of baby blanket from a lost child. A swatch of a graduation gown she purchased but never got to wear. The faded cotton of her husband's uniform. But look here. See the colors and fabrics of a new wedding, of children and prosperity? And of course, the last panel is the garden. Much loss and uncertainty she had to endure before she could sew that ending to her own story. If I could have reached your wife's son Moon, that's what I would have spoken to her about."
On the bedside table was a Bible. She brought it to him.
Wanda's right. You're not an a-hole husband, she said. I can tell you care about your wife. I'm just a woman she never met, on the other side of the world. But could you give her this for me? These words always bring me solace. Scripture will always be there, no matter what doors are closed to her. Jundo held the book, felt its soft cover. I could read some with you, she said. Do you know of Christ? Jundo nodded. I've been briefed on him. A pain came to the corners of her eyes, and she nodded in acceptance. He handed back the book. I'm sorry, Jundo told her. This book is forbidden where I come from. Possessing it comes with a high penalty. You don't know how it sorrows me to hear that, she said, then went to the door where a white guayabera hung. Hot water on that arm, you hear? And wear this shirt tonight. When she left, the dog leaped back onto the bed. He pulled off his dress shirt and looked around the guest room. It was filled with memorabilia of the senator, photos of him with proud people, plaques of gold and bronze. There was a small writing desk, and here a phone rested atop a white book. Jundo lifted the phone's receiver, listened to its solid tone. He took up the book underneath it. Inside were thousands of names. It took him a while to understand that everyone in Central Texas was listed here, with their full names and addresses. He couldn't believe that you could look up anyone and seek them out, that all you had to do to prove you weren't an orphan was to open a book and point to your parents. It was unfathomable that a permanent link existed to mothers and fathers and lost mates, that they were forever fixed in type. He flipped through the pages. Donaldson, Jimenez, Smith. All it took was a book. A little book could save you a lifetime of uncertainty and guesswork. Suddenly, he hated his small, backward homeland, a land of mysteries and ghosts and mistaken identities. He tore a page from the back of the book and wrote across the top, "Alive and well in North Korea." Below this, he wrote the names of all the people he'd helped kidnap. Next to Mayumi Nota, the girl from the pier, he placed a star of exception. In the bathroom, there was a basket filled with new razors and miniature tubes of toothpaste and individually wrapped soaps. He didn't touch them. Instead, he stared in the mirror, seeing himself the way the senator's wife had seen him. He touched his lacerations, his broken clavicle, the burn marks, the 11th rib. Then he touched the face of Sun Moon, the beautiful woman in this halo of wounds. He went to the toilet and stared into its mouth. It came in a moment, the meat, three heaves of it, and then he was empty. His skin had gone tight and he felt weak. In the shower, he made the water hot. He stood there, steeping his wound in the spray like fire on his arm. When he closed his eyes, it was like being nursed by the second mate's wife again, back when his eyes were still swollen shut, and she was just the smell of a woman. The sounds a woman made. And he had a fever, and he didn't know where he was. And he had to imagine the face of the woman who would save him. Toward twilight, Jundo dressed in his white guayabera shirt, with its stiff collar and fancy stitching. Through the window, he could see Dr. Song and the minister exit a shiny black mobile home where they had been holding talks with the senator all afternoon. The dog stood and came to the edge of the bed. There was a harness around its neck. It was kind of a sad thing, a dog without a warren. A band started playing somewhere, perhaps Spanish voices. When Jundo turned to go out into the night, the dog followed. The hallway was lined with photographs of the senator's family, always smiling. To move toward the kitchen was like going back in time, the graduation photos becoming sports photos, and then there were scouting clubs, pigtails,
birthday parties, and finally the pictures were of babies. Was this what a family was? How it grew? Straight as the children's teeth? Sure, there was an arm in a sling, and over time, the grandparents disappeared from the photos. The occasions changed, as did the dogs. But this was a family, start to finish, without wars or famines or political prisons, without a stranger coming to town to drown your daughter. Outside, the air was dry and cool and smelled of cactus ribs and aluminum stock tanks. The stars wavered as Texas gave off the last of its heat. Jundo followed the sounds of Mexican singers and a whirring blender to the corral, where the men wore white shirts and the women were wrapped in colorful shawls. There was a tripod of fire, illuminating the sheen of people's faces. It was a thrilling idea, setting wood ablaze just so people could mingle and enjoy one another's company in the dark. By the flickering light, the senator played his fiddle and sang a song called "The Yellow Rose of Texas." Wanda walked by holding so many limes she had to press them against her chest. When Jundo stopped, the dog stopped, its coat in the firelight orange and black.
"Okay, dog," Jundo said, and stiffly patted its head like an American would.
Wanda juiced limes with a wooden baton as Pilar upturned bottles of liquor into the blender. Wanda jazzed its button in time with the music. Then Pilar filled a line of yellow plastic cups with great flair. Wanda brought him a drink when she saw him. He stared at the salt on the rim.
"What's this?" he asked.
"Go ahead," she said. "Be a sport. You know what Saddam had in the deepest room in his bunker? I'm talking below the hardened war rooms and command centers. He had an Xbox video game with only one controller." He gave her a look of incomprehension.
"Everybody needs to have fun," she said.
Jundo drank from the cup. Tart and dry, it tasted like thirst itself.
"I looked into your friend," Wanda said. "The Japanese and South Koreans don't have anybody who fits the bill. If he crossed the Yalu into China, then who knows? And maybe he's not going by his real name. Give it time. He might turn up. Sometimes they make their way to Thailand."
Jundo unfolded his piece of paper and handed it to Wanda.
"Can you pass along this message for me? Alive and well in North Korea," she read. "What is this?"
"It's a list of Japanese kidnap victims."
"Those kidnappings all made the news," Wanda said. "Anyone could have made this list. It doesn't prove anything."
"Prove?" Jundo asked.
"I'm not trying to prove anything. I'm trying to tell you what no one else can, that none of these people were lost, that they all survived their kidnappings, and that they are alive and well. Not knowing, that's the worst. That list isn't for you. It's a message from me to those families, for their peace of mind. It's all I have to give them."
"They're all alive and well," she said. "Except for the one with the star." Jundo made himself speak her name.
"Mayumi," he said.
She sipped her drink and looked at him sideways.
"Do you speak Japanese?"
"Enough," he said.
"Watashi no neko ga imaigo ni narimashita."
"What's that mean?" "Can you help me find my kitty cat?" Wanda gave him a look, then slid the paper into her back pocket. It wasn't until dinner that Jundo got a good look at Dr. Song. Jundo tried to guess how the talks had gone by the way Dr. Song poured margaritas for the ladies and nodded in approval at the spiciness of the salsa. The table was round and seated 8, with Pilar swooping in to add and remove dishes. She named everything on the Lazy Susan at the center of the table, including flautas, mole, rellenos, and fix-it-yourself tacos. There was a tortilla warmer and dishes of cilantro, onion, diced tomatoes, shredded cabbage, Mexican cream, black beans, and tiger. When Dr. Song tasted his tiger, a look of pure glee crossed his face.
"Tell me this isn't the best tiger you've had," he said. "Tell me American tiger can measure up. Is the Korean tiger not fresher, more vital?"
Pilar brought another platter of meat.
"Bueno," she said. "Too bad there is no Mexican tiger."
"You've outdone yourself, Pilar," the senator's wife said. "Your best Tex-Mex yet." Dr. Song eyed them both with suspicion. The minister held up his taco. In English, he said,
"Yes."
Tommy ate his taco and nodded in approval.
"The best meat I ever had," he said, "was with me and some buddies on leave. We raved and raved about the dinner, eating until we were stuffed. We spoke so highly, they brought out the chef who said he would make us some to go, that it was no problem because he had another dog out back."
"Oh, Tommy," the senator's wife said.
"I was with the tribal militia once," Wanda said. "They prepared a feast of fetal pigs boiled in goat's milk. That's the most tender meat ever."
"Enough," the senator's wife said. "Another topic, please." The senator said, "Anything but politics."
"There is something I must know," Jundo said. "When I was upon the waters in the Sea of Japan, we followed the broadcasts of two American girls. I never knew what became of them."
"The rowers," Wanda said. "What an awful story," the senator's wife said. "Such a waste." The senator turned to Tommy. "They found the boat, right?"
"They found the boat, but no girls," Tommy said.
"Wanda, you get any back channel on what really went down?"
Wanda was leaning over her plate to eat, a stream of taco juice running down her hand.
"I hear the boat was partly burned," she said with her mouth full. "They found the blood of one girl, but nothing of the other. A murder-suicide, perhaps."
"It was the girl who rode in the dark," Jundo said. "She used a flare gun." The table went silent. "She rode with her eyes closed," Jundo said. "That was her problem. That's how she got off course."
Tommy asked, "Why would you ask what happened to those girls if you already knew?"
"I didn't know what happened," Jundo said. "I only knew how."
"Tell us what happened to you,"
the senator's wife asked Jundo.
"You said you spent some time on the water. How did you come by such a wound?"
"It is too soon,"
Dr. Song cautioned them.
"The wound is still fresh. This story is as difficult to hear as it is for my friend to tell."
He turned to Jundo.
"Another time, yes?"
"It's okay," Jundo said. "I can tell it." And he proceeded to recount their encounter with the Americans in great detail, how the Junma was boarded, the way the soldiers moved with their rifles, and how they became blackened with soot. He explained the shoes that he had found, and how they littered the decks, and Jundo described how the soldiers smoked and sorted through the shoes after the boat was declared clear, how they began stealing souvenirs, including the most sacred portraits of the deer and great leaders, and how a knife was then drawn and the Americans were forced to retreat. He mentioned the fire extinguisher. He told them how officers on the American ship drank coffee and watched. He described the cruise missile that flexed its biceps on a sailor's lighter. The senator said, "But how'd you get hurt, son?"
"They came back," Jundo said.
"Why would they come back?" Tommy asked.
"They'd already cleared your vessel."
"What were you doing on a fishing vessel in the first place?" the senator asked.
"Clearly,"
Dr. Song said with some force,
"the Americans were ashamed that a single North Korean, armed only with a knife, made cowardly an entire armed American unit."
Jundo took a drink of water.
"All I know," he said, "is that it was first light, the sun to the starboard. The American ship came out of the brightness, and suddenly we were boarded. The second mate was on deck with the pilot and the captain. It was laundry day, so they were boiling seawater. There was screaming. I went up top with the machinist and the first mate. The man from before, Lieutenant Jervis,
had the second mate at the rail. They were shouting at him about the knife.
Wait a minute, the senator said.
How do you know this sailor's name?
Because he gave me his card, Jundo said. He wanted us to know who had settled the score.
Jundo passed the business card to Wanda, who read the name. Lieutenant Harlan Jervis.
Tommy stepped forward and took the card.
The Fortitude, 5th Fleet, he said to the senator. That must be one of Woody McParkland's boats.
The senator said, Woody wouldn't tolerate any bad apples in his outfit.
The senator's wife lifted her hand.
What happened next?
She asked. Jundo said, Then he was thrown to the sharks, and I jumped in to save him.
Tommy said, But where did all the sharks come from?
The Junma is a fishing boat, Jundo explained. Sharks were always following us.
So there was just a swirl of sharks? Tommy asked.
Did the boy know what was happening to him?
The senator asked.
Tommy asked, Did Lieutenant Jervis say anything?
Well, there weren't many sharks at first, Jundo said.
The senator asked,
Did this Jervis fellow throw the boy in himself? With his own hands?
Or did he order one of his sailors to do it?
Tommy asked. The minister placed his hands flat on the table.
Story,
he declared in English.
True.
No,
the senator's wife said. Jundo turned to her. Her old lady eyes pale and cloudy.
No, she said. I understand that during wartime no side has a monopoly on the unspeakable. And I am not naive enough to think that the engines of the righteous aren't powered by the fuel of injustice. But these are our finest boys, under our best command, flying the colors of this nation, so no, sir, you are wrong. No sailor of ours ever did such an act. I know this. I know this for a fact.
She rose from the table. Jundo rose too.
I apologize for disturbing you, he said. I shouldn't have told the story. But you must believe that I have looked into the eyes of sharks, seen them stupid with death. When you're near them, an arm's length away, their eyes flick white. They'll turn sideways and lift their heads when they want a better look before they bite you. I didn't feel the teeth in my flesh, but it was icy and electric when they hit bone. The blood. I could smell it in the water. I know the feeling of seeing a boy right in front of you, and he is about to be gone. You suddenly understand you'll never see him again. I've heard the last gibberish a person says. When a person slips into the water, right in front of you, the disbelief of it, that never leaves you. And the artifacts people leave behind. A shaving brush, a pair of shoes. How dumb they seem. You can handle them in your fingers, stare at them all you want. They don't mean anything without the person.
Jundo was shaking now.
I've held the widow, his widow, with these arms as she sang nursery rhymes to him, wherever he was.
Later, Jundo was in his room. He was looking up all the Korean names in Texas, the hundreds of Kims and Lees, and he was almost to Pox and Parks when the dog on his bed suddenly stood. Wanda was at the door. She knocked lightly twice, then opened. I drive a Volvo, she said from the threshold. It's a hand-me-down from my dad. When I was a kid, he worked security at the port. He always had a maritime scanner going so he could know if a captain was in trouble. I have one, too, and I turn it on when I can't sleep. Jundo just stared at her. The dog lay down again. I found out some things about you, Wanda said. Like who you really are. She shrugged. I thought it only fair to share a few things about me.
Whatever your file says about me, Jundo told her. It's wrong. I don't hurt people anymore. That's the last thing I want to do.
How did she have a file on him anyway, he wondered, when Pyongyang couldn't even get his info right.
I put your wife, Sun Moon, into the computer, and you popped right up, Commander Ga.
She studied him for a reaction, and when he gave none, she said, Minister of Prison Mines, holder of the Golden Belt in Taekwondo, champion against Kimura in Japan, father of two, winner of the Crimson Star for unnamed acts of heroism, and so on. There were no current photos, so I hope you don't mind me uploading the pictures I took. Jundo closed the phone book. You've made a mistake, he said, and you must never call me that in front of the others.
Commander Ga, Wanda said, like she was savoring the name.
She held up her phone.
There's an app that predicts the orbit of the space station, she said. It will be passing over Texas in 8 minutes.
He followed her outside, to the edge of the desert. The Milky Way reeled above them, the smell of creosote and dry granite sweeping down from the mountains. When a coyote called, the dog moved between them, its tail twitching with excitement, the three of them waiting for another coyote to respond.
Tommy, Jundo said. He's the one who speaks Korean, right?
Yes, Wanda said. The Navy stationed him there for 10 years. They cupped their hands and stared at the sky, scanning for the arc of the satellite.
I don't understand any of this, Wanda said. What's the Minister of Prison Mines doing here in Texas? Who's the other man claiming to be a minister?
None of this is his fault. He just does what he's told. You've got to understand where he's from. If they say you're an orphan, then you're an orphan. If they tell you to go down a hole, well, you're suddenly a guy who goes down holes. If they tell you to hurt people, then it begins.
Hurt people?
I mean, if they tell him to go to Texas to tell a story, suddenly he's nobody but that.
I believe you, she said. I'm trying to understand.
Wanda was the first to spot the International Space Station, diamond bright and racing across the sky. Jundo tracked it, as amazed as when the captain first indicated it above the sea.
You're not looking to defect, are you? She asked.
If you were looking to defect, that would cause a lot of problems, trust me.
It could be done, mind you. I'm not saying it's impossible.
Dr. Song, the minister, Jundo said. You know what would happen to them? I could never do that to them.
Of course, she said.
Far in the distance, too many kilometers away to gauge, a lightning storm clung to the horizon. Still, its flashes were enough to silhouette closer mountain ranges and give hints of others even farther yet. The strobe of one bolt gave them a glimpse of a dark owl, caught mid-flight, as it silently hunted through the tall, needly trees. Wanda turned to him.
Do you feel free?
She asked. She cocked her head.
Do you know what free feels like?
How to explain his country to her, he wondered. How to explain that leaving its confines to sail upon the Sea of Japan, that was being free. Or that as a boy, sneaking from the smelter floor for an hour to run with other boys in the slag heaps, even though there were guards everywhere. Because there were guards everywhere, that was the purest freedom. How to make someone understand that the scorch water they made from the rice, burned to the bottom of the pot, tasted better than any Texas lemonade. Are there labor camps here? He asked.
No,
she said. Mandatory marriages? Forced criticism sessions? Loudspeakers? She shook her head. Then I'm not sure I could ever feel free here, he said.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Wanda asked. She seemed almost mad at him.
That doesn't help me understand anything.
When you're in my country, he said, everything makes simple, clear sense. It's the most straightforward place on earth. She looked out toward the desert. Jundo said, Your father was a tunnel rat, yes?
It was my uncle, she said.
Okay, your uncle. Most people walking around, they don't think about being alive. But when your uncle was about to enter an enemy tunnel, I bet he was thinking about nothing but that. And when he made it out,
He probably felt more alive than we'll ever feel. The most alive in the world. And that until the next tunnel, nothing could touch him. He was invincible. You ask him if he felt more alive here or over there.
I know what you're saying and all, Wanda said. When I was a kid, he was always telling hair raisers about the tunnels, like it was no big deal. But when he visits Dad's now, and you get up in the middle of the night for a glass of water, there he is, wide awake in the kitchen, just standing there, staring into the sink. That's not invincible. That's not wishing you were back in Vietnam where you felt alive. That's wishing you'd never even seen the place. Think about what that does to your freedom metaphor.
Jundo gave a look of sad recognition. I know this dream your uncle has, he said. The one that woke him and made him walk to the kitchen.
Trust me, she said. You don't know my uncle.
Jundo nodded. Fair enough, he said. She stared at him, almost vexed again.
Okay, she said. Go on and tell it.
I'm just trying to help you understand him.
Tell it, she said.
When a tunnel would collapse, Jundo said.
In the prison mines?
That's right, he said. When a tunnel would collapse in a mine, we'd have to go dig men out. Their eyeballs would be flat and caked. And their mouths. They were always wide open and filled with dirt. That's what you couldn't stand to look at. A throat packed like that. The tongue grubbed and brown. It was our greatest fear, ending up with everyone standing around in a circle, staring at the panic of your last moment. So your uncle, when you find him at the sink late at night, it means he's had the dream where you breathe the dirt. In the dream, everything's dark. You're holding your breath, holding it, and when you can't hold it anymore, when you're about to breathe the dirt, that's when you wake, gasping. I have to wash my face after that dream. For a while, I do nothing but breathe. But it seems like I'll never get my air back. Wanda studied him a moment. She said,
I'm going to give you something, okay?
She handed him a small camera that fit in his palm. He'd seen one like it in Japan. Take my picture, she said. Just point it and press the button. He held the camera up in the dark. There was a little screen upon which he could barely see her outline. Then there was a flash. Wanda reached in her pocket and removed a bright red cell phone. When she held it up, the picture he'd taken of her was on its screen.
These were made for Iraq, she said. I give them to locals, people who are friendly. When they think I need to see something, they take a picture of it. The picture goes to a satellite, then only to me. The camera has no memory, so it doesn't store the pictures. No one could ever find out what you took a picture of or where it went.
What do you want me to take a picture of?
Nothing, she said. Anything. It's up to you. If there's ever something you'd like to show me that would help me understand your country, just push this button.
He looked around, as if trying to decide what in this dark world he would photograph.
Don't be scared of it, she said and leaned in close to him.
Reach out and take our picture, she told him. He could feel her shouldering into him, her arm around his back. He took the picture, then looked at it on the screen. Was I supposed to smile? He asked, handing it to her. She looked at the picture.
How intimate, she said and laughed. You could loosen up a bit, yeah. A smile wouldn't hurt.
Intimate, he said. I don't know this word.
You know, close, she said. When two people share everything, when there are no secrets between them.
He looked at the picture. Intimate, he said. That night, in his sleep, Jundo heard the orphan, Bosong. Because he had no hearing, Bosong was one of the loudest boys when he tried to speak. And in his sleep, he was even worse,
clamoring on through the night in the slaw of his deaf talk. Jundo gave him a bunk in the hall, where the cold stupefied most boys. There'd be some teeth chattering for a while, and then silence. But not Bosung. It only made him talk louder in his sleep. Tonight, Jundo could hear him, whimpering, whining. And in this dream, Jundo somehow began to understand the deaf boy. His stray sounds started to form words, and though Jundo couldn't quite make the words into sentences, he knew that Bosung was trying to tell him the truth about something. There was a grand and terrible truth, and just as the orphan's words started to make sense, just as the deaf boy was finally making himself heard, Jundo woke. He opened his eyes to see the muzzle of the dog, who'd crept up to share the pillow with him. Jundo could see that behind the eyelid, the dog's eye was rolling and twitching, with each whimper of its own bad dream. Reaching out, Jundo stroked the dog's fur, calming it, and the whines and whimpers ceased. Jundo pulled on his pants and his new white shirt. Barefoot, he made his way to Dr. Song's room, which was empty, save for a packed travel suitcase waiting at the foot of the bed. The kitchen was empty, as was the dining room. Out in the corral was where Jundo found him, sitting at a wooden picnic table. There was a midnight wind. Clouds flashed across a newly risen moon. Dr. Song had changed back into a suit and a tie. "The CIA woman came to see me," Jundo said. Dr. Song didn't respond. He was staring at the fire pit. Its coal still gave off warmth, and when the wind eddied away fresh ashes, the pit throbbed pink. "You know what she asked me?" Jundo said. "She asked if I felt free." On the table was Dr. Song's cowboy hat, his hand keeping it from blowing away.
"And what did you tell our spunky American gal?" he asked.
"The truth," Jundo said. Dr. Song nodded. His face seemed puffy somehow, his eyes almost drooped shut with age.
"Was it a success?" Jundo asked.
"Did you get what you came for? Whatever it was that you needed?"
"Did I get what I needed?"
Dr. Song asked himself.
"I have a car and a driver and an apartment on Moranbong Hill. My wife, when I had her, was love itself. I have seen the White Knights in Moscow and toured the Forbidden City. I have lectured at Kim Il-sung University. I have raced a jet ski with a dear leader in a cold mountain lake. And I have witnessed 10,000 women tumble in unison at the Arirang Festival. Now I have tasted Texas barbecue."
That kind of talk gave Jundo the willies.
"Is there something you need to tell me, Dr. Song?" he asked.
Dr. Song fingered the crest of his hat.
"I have outlasted everyone," he said. "My colleagues, my friends, I have seen them sent to farm communes and mining camps, and some just went away. So many predicaments we faced. Every fix, every pickle. Yet here I am, old Dr. Song."
He gave Jundo a fatherly pat on the leg.
"Not bad for a war orphan."
Jundo still felt a bit like he was in the dream, that he was being told something important in a language almost understood. He looked over to see his dog had followed him out and was now watching from a distance, its coat seeming to change pattern with shifts in the wind.
"At this moment," Dr. Song said, "the sun is high over Pyongyang. Still, we must try to get some sleep."
He stood and placed the hat upon his head. Walking stiffly away, he added,
"In the movies about Texas, they call it shut-eye."
In the morning, there were no big goodbyes. Pilar filled a basket of muffins and fruit for their plane trip, and everyone gathered out front where the senator and Tommy had pulled up the Thunderbird and the Mustang. Dr. Song translated the minister's farewell wishes, which were really invitations for them all to visit him soon in Pyongyang, especially Pilar, who would be hard-pressed to return from a worker's paradise if she did. To all, Dr. Song offered only a bow. Jundo approached Wanda. She wore a jogging top so he could see the power of her chest and shoulders. Her hair, for the first time, was down, framing her face.
"Happy trails to you," he said to her. "That's a Texas goodbye, no?"
"Yes," she said, smiling. "Do you know the response?"
"It's until we meet again."
The senator's wife held a puppy, her fingertips moving through the soft folds of its skin. She considered Jundo for a long moment. He said,
"Thank you for tending to my wound."
"I've taken an oath," she said, "to assist all in medical need."
"I know you don't believe my story," he said.
"I believe you come from a land of suffering," she said. Her voice was measured and resonant, the way she'd spoken when she'd talked about the Bible. "I also believe your wife is a good woman, one that only needs a friend. Everyone tells me I'm not allowed to be that friend to her." She kissed the puppy, then held it out to Jundo.
"So this is the best I can do."
"A heartfelt gesture,"
Dr. Song said, smiling.
"Unfortunately, canines are not legal in Pyongyang."
She pressed the dog into Jundo's hands.
"Don't listen to him or his rules," she said. "Think of your wife. Find a way."
Jundo accepted the dog. "The Catahoula is bred to herd," she said. "So when that puppy's mad at you, he'll bite at your heels. And when he wants to show his love, he'll bite at your heels."
"We have a plane to catch," Dr. Song said.
"We call him Brando," the senator's wife said. "But you can name him whatever you like."
"Brando."
"Yes," she said. "See this mark on his haunch? That's where a brand would go."
"A brand."
"A brand's a permanent mark that says something's yours."
"Like a tattoo,"
she nodded.
"Like your tattoo."
"Then Brando it is."
The minister began walking toward the Thunderbird, but the senator stopped him. "No," the senator said. He pointed at Jundo. "Him." Jundo looked to Wanda, who gave a nodding shrug. Tommy had his arms crossed and wore a satisfied smile. Jundo took a seat in the coupe. The senator joined him, their shoulders almost touching, and slowly they began moving down the gravel road. "We thought the talkative one was manipulating the dumb one," the senator said. He shook his head. "Turns out you were the one all along." "Is there any end to you people? And controlling him with yeses and nos at the end of sentences. How dumb do you think we are? I know you've got the backward nation card to play and the I'll get thrown in a gulag excuse. But coming all this way to pretend to be a nobody? Why tell that cockamamie shark story? And what the hell does a minister of prison mines do exactly?" The senator's accent was getting stronger as he spoke, and though Jundo couldn't catch all the words, he knew exactly what the senator was saying.
"I can explain," Jundo said.
"Oh, I'm listening,"
the senator told him.
"It's true," Jundo said. "The minister is not really a minister."
"So who is he?"
"Dr. Song's driver."
The senator laughed in disbelief.
"Christ almighty," he said. "Did you even consider playing level with us? You don't want us to board your fishing boats, that's something to talk about. We sit down in the same room. We suggest that you maybe don't use fishing boats to smuggle Taepodong missile parts, counterfeit currency, heroin, and so on. Then we reach an agreement. Instead, I'm wasting my time talking to the chumps while you were what, getting a gander?"
"Suppose you had dealt with me," Jundo said, even though he had no idea what he was talking about. "What is it you would have wanted?"
"What would I want?" the senator asked.
"I never heard what you had to offer, exactly.
We'd want something solid, something you can mount above the mantle. And it would have to be precious. Everyone would have to know it cost your leader dearly."
"For something like that, you'd give us what we wanted?"
"The boats?"
"Sure.
We could lay off them, but why? Every damn one of them is freighted with mayhem and compass toward trouble. But the dear leader's toy?
A whistle came from the senator's teeth. That's a different prospect. To hand that thing back, we might as well take a piss on the Prime Minister of Japan's peach tree. But you admit, Jundo said, that it belongs to the dear leader, that you're holding his property. The talks are over, the senator said. They happened yesterday, and they went nowhere. The senator then took his foot off the gas pedal. There is, however, one more issue, Commander, the senator said as they drifted to the side of the road, and it has nothing to do with the negotiations or whatever games y'all are playing. The Mustang pulled beside them. From its passenger seat, her hand hanging out the window, Wanda spoke to the senator. You boys all right? She asked. Just getting a few things straight, the senator said. Don't wait for us. We'll be right along. Wanda slapped her hand on the side of the Mustang, and Tommy drove on. Jundo caught a glimpse of Dr. Song in the back seat, but he couldn't tell if the old man's eyes were crinkled in fear or narrowed by betrayal. Here's the thing, the senator said, and his eyes were locked into Jundo's. Wanda says you've done some deeds, that there's blood on your file. I invited you into my house. You slept in my bed, walked amongst my people, a killer. They tell me life isn't worth much where you're from, but all these people you met here, they mean an awful lot to me. I've dealt with killers before. In fact, I'll only deal with you next time. But such dealings don't take place unawares. Such people don't sit down to dinner with your wife unbeknownst. So, Commander Ga, you can give a message direct to the dear leader, and this is on my letterhead. You tell him this kind of business is not appreciated. You tell him no boat is safe now. You tell him he'll never see his precious toy again. He can kiss it goodbye. The Aleutian was littered with fast food wrappers and empty Tecate beer cans. Two black motorcycles blocked the aisle in first class, and most of the seats were taken up by the 9,000 DVDs Comrade Byuk's team had purchased in Los Angeles. Comrade Byuk himself looked as though he hadn't slept. He was camped out in the back of the plane, where his boys were watching movies on fold-up computers. Dr. Song meditated alone on the plane for some time, and he didn't stir until they were far from Texas. He came to Jundo.
You have a wife? Dr. Song asked.
A wife?
The senator's wife. She said the dog was for your wife. Is this true? Have you a wife?
No, Jundo said. I lied to explain the tattoo on my chest. Dr. Song nodded.
And the senator, he figured out our ruse with the minister, and he felt he could only put his faith in you. This is why you rode with him?
Yes, Jundo said. Though the senator said it was Wanda who figured it out.
Of course, he said. And concerning the senator, what was the nature of your conversation?
He said that he disapproved of our tactics,
that the boarding of fishing boats would continue and that we would never see our precious toy again. That's the message he wanted me to deliver. To whom?
To the dear leader.
To the dear leader? You?
Dr. Song asked.
Why should he think you had his ear?
How should I know? Jundo asked. He must have thought I was someone I'm not.
Yes, yes, that's a useful tactic, Dr. Song said. We cultivated that.
I didn't do anything wrong, Jundo said. I don't even know what toy he was talking about.
Fair enough, Dr. Song said.
He took Jundo's shoulder and squeezed it in a good-natured way.
I suppose it doesn't matter now. You know what radiation is?
Jundo nodded.
The Japanese invented an instrument called a background radiation detector. They pointed it at the sky to study something about space. When the dear leader heard of this device, he asked his scientists if such a thing could be attached to an airplane. He wanted to fly over our mountains and use it to find uranium deep underground. His scientists were unanimous. So the dear leader sent a team to the Kitami Observatory in Hokkaido.
They stole it? Dr. Song got a wild look on his face.
The thing's the size of a Mercedes, he said. We sent a fishing boat to pick it up, but along came the Yankees.
Here, Dr.